following podcast is part of the Underdog Sports Podcasting Network. For a full list of our shows, as well as breaking sports news and engaging feature stories, visit us at www.theunderdogsports.com.
Welcome to The Leftovers, brought to you by the Underdog Sports Network, with Josh Dunn, Anshu Khanna, and Dan Bauer. Hello and welcome. This is episode 12 of The Leftovers. Oddly enough, episode 12 lands on January 12th. Dan and Anshu won't be able to join this evening, but I am lucky enough to be graced by the presence of the founder of the Underdog Sports Network, and the host of both the Underdog Podcast and Tales from the Association, Chris Horwoodell. Chris, thanks so much for joining me here on this 12th episode.
Oh, absolutely, Josh. I'm happy to be here, and I don't know how much of a pleasure it's going to be for you.
Well, I guess time will tell. Wanted you to have an opportunity to just talk a little bit about, especially this Tales from the Association podcast. I know you've got a lot of loyal followers, but if there's people who are listening to our show that haven't had an opportunity to hear that show, tell our listeners a little bit about what you're trying to do and accomplish with that podcast.
Yeah, like Josh mentioned, I actually host three podcasts for the network: Tales from the Association, The Underdog, and UFC Commentaries with Greg Krohn. As far as Tales goes, it's basically, you know, it was born out of me playing around on Reddit one day in the Sixers subreddit, and I've told this story a lot, and I'm sorry to repeat myself, but a thread popped up. It was an AMA from a guy who had played from the Sixers for a while, named Steve Castleberry. He was with the Sixers in training camp for a couple of years and played in the preseason a little bit, never actually made the team, but it kind of got me thinking, you know, I would love to do something that can give people access that we're not accustomed to hear the whole story and, you know, why a player makes the decisions he makes, from, you know, picking a college to signing a free agent deal to whatever goes on, sort of a behind the scenes look of life in the NBA. And, you know, I reached out to Steve to see if this was going to be a feasible idea. And it was an interesting episode. It wasn't the first episode that I actually aired, just because it took me a little while to get Steve to come out of his shell, but it's been a lot of fun since then. And I think we proved proof of concept with that. We've done 16 so far. We've got a bunch more in the can, and you know, it's been really fun. We've been incredibly lucky. Guys like, you know, Will Perdue's been on the show, and Grant Long and Jamar Johnson. He's recorded with Tony Delk, and his episode is spectacular. I can't wait for you guys to hear it.
Big Tony Delk fan. Loved him when he played for the Suns. So awesome. Again, thank you so much for taking the time out to join me here on this show, and congratulations on all your success with both that podcast and really with the network itself. I've just seen this podcast network continue to grow and grow, and you know, obviously that's due largely in part to you. So congratulations on the continued success that you're having. But with that, I want to jump right in. I know you're a big Philadelphia 76ers guy. I hear you talk about it on, you know, the Underdog Podcast quite often. And, yeah. You know, obviously some big moves that they've been making the last couple of years. They've been stockpiling draft picks. What are your thoughts on this team so far this year? Are they about where you thought they'd be? I know they played today in London. They let one slip. But I just want to hear your thoughts on the Sixers so far as their season continues to roll on.
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting that we're talking right now, because I'm still in that heartbroken phase after this game today, and for a couple of reasons. One, you know, the Sixers were up 22 points in the second quarter, 6 minutes left in the second quarter. Ben Simmons hit a jump shot that put them up 22, and they end up losing by 11, I believe, to the Celtics today in London. A fun little noon start for me here on the West Coast. They are pretty much where I expected them to be. You know, obviously, a big part of that is I did expect Markel Fultz to play. And this is another element of why I'm a sad Philadelphia 76ers fan today. I watched some videos from Markel shooting around in London, and there have been some videos that leaked over the past couple of weeks that have looked good. The jump shot looked like it was normalizing. It looked like he was shooting more like he was at Washington, where he was really a three-level scorer. But today he started to see that hitch come back, and that scares me. We've never really seen this. This is almost like Chuck Knobloch not being able to throw to first base when he was playing with the Yankees at this point. It really seems like it's mental for Foltz. I don't know what they're going to do. We expected that we could see Foltz play as early as Monday against the Raptors. And if this isn't fixed, I just don't know what they're going to do. He's a 19-year-old. I don't know if they're going to put him out there and, you know, let him ruin his confidence entirely. Or I think there's a realistic chance they might just sit him. I do think that they're probably going to try and play him in the next week or so. But if it doesn't go well, you know, I could see them shutting number one pick Markelle Fultz down for the year to figure out what's going on and teach this guy how to shoot a jump shot again. We've never seen this before. This has never happened in basketball, that a guy just wanted to improve so much that he tried to fix his shot and completely broke it.
Yeah, and obviously with Embiid and, you know, playing limited minutes this season, you know, in some of their recent games, and Ben Simmons coming back off of an injury last year, do you think that would be the right move for them to bench Markelle Fultz for the year if there is some concern about his health moving forward?
I don't have any concern about his health. I have concern about his mental health. I physically, he's 100% fine. There's no question in my mind about that. And, you know, Embiid has obviously had issues too, but I think he's sort of moved past that this year. He's playing about almost 32 minutes a game. He's played almost as much this year as he did all of last year. And granted, that was a very small sample size for Embiid with the Philadelphia 76ers last year. But I think today was his 29th or 30th game, so he's right there. He's actually played in about 77% of the games for the Sixers this year. And do I still hold my breath every time he hits the ground? Yeah. Does he still hit the ground way too much? Absolutely. But it's gotten to the point where I'm less concerned about Embiid. I'm not at all concerned about Simmons. That was a freak thing. He looks good. He's got some evolution to his game that needs to happen too. There, you know, that jump shot. Well, it looked great today. Beautiful turnaround jump shot that surprised me. Certainly surprised Jaylen Brown, who was guarding him at the time. That needs to continue to expand, and he needs to make that a bigger part of his game so that people can't just sag and sit in the lane, forcing him to take jump shots or crowding the lane for Embiid or whoever is in there. But, I'm not worried about those guys. Right now it's just I'm worried about Markelle, and I want this team to continue to gel, continue to play well. They have a really rough stretch coming up. This month is going to be very, very difficult for them. They're the Celtics again in a couple of days, of the Raptors up on Monday. I think it's important not to overreact to what happens this month. It's a growing team. We saw this with the Timberwolves last year. Young teams need to figure out how to learn in the NBA. And I would say the goal for them is try and sneak into that 8 seed. If they miss it, it'll be disappointing. It won't be the end of the world. And, if they get there, playing with house money from there on.
Yeah, you mentioned the Raptors. My Cavs are actually up in Toronto this evening. I think they just tipped off against the Raptors. But LeBron being interviewed today started talking a little bit about, you know, just thinking toward retirement. Obviously, just turned 33 years old. Mentioned in the interview, you know, he's got a 13-year-old son who's developing as a really good basketball player. He wants to be able to be more of a part of that as, you know, as he gets older. How much do you read into this? Obviously, LeBron's still playing at the highest level, you know, maybe some of the best basketball of his career. Do you think there's anything to worry about for Cavs fans on LeBron maybe calling it quits a little sooner than maybe a lot of us anticipated?
For Cavs fans, I don't think you have to worry about the LeBron stuff. I've always thought that LeBron is going to stick around to play a year with little Bronny. I've always thought that was the most likely scenario. This is a guy, this is a physical phenom. Was 33 years old now, and while he's not the run and jump athlete he was, he's still in the top, 1% of 1% of people in the universe right now. Still an unbelievable physical specimen. The jump shooting's actually gotten considerably better. I think he's over 40% for the year. I think he's going to stick around for a while. I don't think he's retiring anytime soon. The bigger concern for Cavs fans is, I'd be worried that contract's up this year, and he very much wants to chase that Jordan championship record. I don't know if Cleveland's the place to do that.
Yeah, I've heard you mention that on some previous shows. Anshu and I have talked a lot about this on our previous podcast and even on this one a little bit. I don't see LeBron leaving as long as the Cavs continue doing whatever they need to do to put the pieces around him. And I think this year especially is an example of them doing just that, bringing in Derrick Rose on a veteran minimum, bringing in Jeff Green on a veteran minimum, guys like Jose Calderon, who had to fill in for injured point guards, and Derrick Rose and Isaiah Thomas, who's now just getting back from injury. And if Isaiah Thomas can get back to fully healthy and play at the level, even close to the level that he did a year ago, Kevin Love's having his best year as kind of the number two guy on that team. I just can't see LeBron, especially talking about, you know, being around his son and being a part of his basketball life. I can't see him leaving. I don't see him going to L.A. because I don't think L.A. is going to be nearly good enough for him to go there. Right. I've heard you mention Philadelphia. I don't see him moving into that market. I just don't see that the fit out there. Where would you, if you had to say a team that you could see him going to, realistically? I know there's been a lot of them thrown out there. I mean, who would you put LeBron on?
Well, Mr. Conley and I actually have a little wager right now. He's got I've got four teams. He's got the rest of the field for where LeBron ends up, and Cleveland isn't his side.
Oh, he's going to win that.
For your sake, I hope so. But you know, we will see. And I've got four teams, and those four teams are the Philadelphia 76ers, the Los Angeles Lakers, the Los Angeles Clippers, and the Houston Rockets. And I think right now, that there's a lot of smoke to that Houston Rockets.
That's the only one I can see even being a remote possibility, personally. I get the whole L.A. thing. I get building your brand. I get being in Hollywood. I understand that argument. But I don't see the talent there. Or I guess you could say Magic's good as far as the ownership goes, and I could see wanting to play around young talent, but I think the Lakers are several years away, even if they bring in an aging LeBron.
Yeah, no, it's worth pointing out that I made that, you know, that gentleman's agreement prior to the season started, and I would probably eliminate the Lakers from that at this point. There's a lot of reasons it doesn't really make sense. The team's dysfunctional. I don't think LeBron wants to go deal with LaVar Ball when he's 34 years old. And quite frankly, Lonzo and LeBron don't make a ton of sense either, because it was kind of the same issue we were running into in Philadelphia when we were discussing what was going to happen in the draft this year and trying to shoehorn Lonzo Ball into this team. You know, you have a guy in Ben Simmons or LeBron James who's going to have the ball a lot of the time, and that limits Lonzo to being a spot-up jump shooter or a cutter or something like that. He is much, 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 much more effective both personally and as part of the team when Lonzo has the ball in his hands. He is a great initiator of the offense. He makes everyone else more unselfish. And he's just not made to play off the ball. So you really have to make some changes to that team. I don't know how you deal Lonzo, where he would go. I think you might have to consider it. I don't know if Kuzma and Brandon Ingram fit. You would have to make a lot of changes to that LA team for LeBron to make sense there.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Houston one, like you said, probably makes the most sense at this point in the season. But even then, Chris Paul, obviously a facilitator. James Harden likes having the ball in his hands all the time. And LeBron, we know, you know, is known for wanting to have the ball in his hands all the time. So that's the struggle I have with it. I get it from a talent standpoint. I just don't get it from a team gel standpoint. And if the Cavs can continue to get there, now that they're getting healthy, you know, D-Rose should be back soon. Isaiah's playing every other night. You know, if the Cavs can get there, I think they would be a long shot for him to go anywhere else, especially having that Brooklyn pick that's starting to look better and better as they start to kind of fall off a little bit.
That's entirely possible. I think whether or not LeBron stays in Cleveland is going to be entirely dictated by how far this team goes in the playoffs this year. You know, if you lose to Boston in the conference championship, and then, by the way, I don't think you're going to. I think Cleveland's probably going to be a team that would be a favorite to beat the Celtics come playoff time. Then I think LeBron's going for sure. If it's another ugly finals like it was last year, and it's 4-1, that kind of thing, then I think LeBron's probably gone. Now, you know, if it's a 4-2, if it's a 4-3 loss or somehow a win against this ridiculous Warriors team, then sure. You know, I think LeBron would be inclined to stay in Cleveland, but he needs to see light at the end of that tunnel, and he needs to see a direct path for the team he's on to be able to beat this Warriors team, because this guy cares about championships. Don't kid yourself. He this guy wants three more and really wants four more.
Yeah, I would keep an eye on the trade deadline, too. A lot of people have been throwing the name of DeAndre Jordan out there, you know, as somebody, if that Brooklyn pick has the value for the Clippers, you know, to come into Cleveland. And he's kind of the rim protector that they need. I don't know that it for sure could happen. Maybe they have to throw Tristan Thompson in with a deal like that. But the Cavs, they still, to me, are a team that wants to do whatever it takes to keep LeBron there, obviously. And that would be a move that I think would get them closer to a championship this year. But we'll see. I mean, obviously, a lot can happen between now and the trade deadline, but something to keep an eye on for sure. But I wanted to shift. We've got NFL playoffs this weekend, so I wanted to get a quick preview in of the four games that are going to be taking place this weekend in the divisional round. Obviously, let's just kind of go through them chronologically as Atlanta goes to Philadelphia. Obviously, sure. A blow with Carson Wentz going down. Atlanta having the big win against the Rams. Where do you see this game shaking out? Can Nick Foles get this Philadelphia team over the hump and keep them in contention?
Oh, Josh, I've spent the entire week not talking about this game because it's just too difficult for me. First time ever a one seed at home in the first round is an underdog to a six seed. I think the Falcons are plus four at this point. Oh, it's all going to be dependent upon what, like you said, Nick Foles. Now, the gamesman in me would think that. So as soon as Wentz went down and Foles was, you know, it's thrust into the lineup, I assumed that they were going to shift more to a running offense and feature Ajayi a lot more than they had previously. And that first game, Foles comes out, he throws four touchdowns, no interceptions, probably should have thrown a pick or two if they made some plays on defense, but he didn't. Looked good, and still the running game took a backseat to the passing game, and that was certainly the case, even to a much more ineffective passing game, those weeks 16 and 17. If I was Doug Peterson, I would come out pounding the ball against this Atlanta team and not give up, even if there's a couple of three and outs to start the game, because I think that's the best path to success. Let Foles play off of a run game rather than trying to get the run game going, playing off of a very inconsistent Nick Foles. It's going to be hard, though. This is the matchup I wanted, obviously, because quite simply, I don't think they were going to score points with be able to score with the Rams. I have a hard time thinking they're going to be able to score with the Falcons, but crazier things have happened.
Yeah, this one, like you said, this is the toughest one for me to pick as well. And in obviously, you know, earlier on in the season when the Eagles were rolling and Carson Wentz was an MVP candidate, you would think that they would be the favorite in this game. But, you know, the Falcons with a big win against the Rams, and what surprised me about that game, and I said this on previous shows here, is the way Atlanta was able to kind of stifle that L.A. defense, or excuse me, that L.A. offense, you know, led by Gurley and Jared Goff, obviously. I was very surprised with the poise from Atlanta in that regard. And then obviously featuring Devontae Freeman, who struggled with some concussion issues this year, out of the backfield a little bit, and I think that's when they're at their best. Julio Jones playing well, Devontae Freeman getting some looks out of the backfield. I just think there's so many different ways that offense can beat you. And if their defense is playing well, I just don't trust Nick Foles at the helm. And I haven't seen enough out of this two running back attack with LeGarrette Blount and Jay Ajayi to give me enough confidence to pick Philadelphia in this game. So if you had to say who you got, are you sticking with Philadelphia or are you taking the Falcons? I'm going to go Falcons in this one.
Well, first of all, strangely enough, that two running back attack has actually been Ajayi and Corey Clement, not LeGarrette.
Yeah, true. Good
LeGarrette
point.
Blount's been the third back in that since
which is
Ajayi
odd because they said that they would continue to feature Blount, and then slowly but surely they worked Ajayi into that starting role.
I think it was just where Clement was so good that he forced his way in. But, you know, my pick, I'm not going to make a pick for this game. I can't do that. I'm an Eagles fan.
All right, it's a tie. So on to the AFC, the night game on Saturday, the Tennessee Titans, after an upset win in Kansas City, goes to maybe the next toughest place to play in the NFL in New England. Obviously, a lot of controversy around New England and the power struggle the past couple weeks. I don't know how much I've bought into that, but who do you have in this one?
Well, this is going to be interesting because I think this could be a fork in the road for this New England Patriots team, and I don't think it's likely that this is going to happen. I'm just let this scenario play out. You know, we obviously all read the ESPN story, and it was great and it was fascinating, and who knows how much of it was fiction, but it was fascinating and it really drives a narrative along for this game. So you have this Titans team who probably shouldn't be here playing, you know, the just dominant force that is the New England Patriots. Now, the Patriots are going to come out one of two ways. One, we're a solidified unit, and they're just going to methodically tear apart this Tennessee Titans team, as they should, as talent would dictate. Or, you know, maybe there's some cracks start to appear. I think, like I said, much less chance of this. But maybe cracks do start to appear. Maybe we see some legitimacy to what was written, and maybe this is kind of the end of this incredible run for the Patriots. With that said, Patriots win by 18.
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, the spread on this one's 13.5. Mariota was the tale of two halves last game. I don't trust him enough to go into New England, even though he's obviously very talented. You know, Derrick Henry looked excellent in that game against Kansas City. Obviously, DeMarco Murray, it looks like he's not going to play again. So Derrick Henry will definitely be featured. I don't see it. Tennessee, I think they, like you said, I think that they could surprise some people. I think they'll keep it close in the first half, but I see New England pulling away pretty easily in the second half of this game and running away with one. So I'm going to agree with you. I'm going to take the Patriots in that one. This next one's the one that interests me. And again, we were just talking about some of the controversy with New England. I thought this was interesting timing for this story to come out. Le'Veon Bell threatening the Steelers that if he does get the franchise tag again, he'll either sit out or potentially consider retirement. How much do you make of this story? But more importantly, Jacksonville really took it to Pittsburgh earlier this season. Ben Roethlisberger with 5 interceptions in that game. Jacksonville's, you know, defense has been touted as the best in the league. Do you think Jacksonville can go into Pittsburgh and have a similar performance that they did earlier in the season?
Let's talk about the Le'Veon thing real quick at the top of this. Le'Veon did come out and say that, quote, I'm gonna quote this here.
You're a better man than I.
Anything this season is irrelevant to his goals regarding retirement franchise and the franchise tag rumor. So, you know, I don't think he's going to let this affect him too much. You know, like we talked about the New England game, it is an interesting narrative. I think it would make the likelihood of Le'Veon Bell moving on to another team considerably more likely if the Steelers were to drop this game to the Jaguars. And, you know, that's a real possibility because this Jaguars defense is outstanding, to say the least. These cornerbacks, you know, graded out as two of the best cornerbacks in the league, and this pass rush gets after you. So they're not going to make this an easy afternoon for Ben Roethlisberger. Now, the Steelers' offense has been very good recently. We'll see what the Antonio Brown situation is, but I do. They're going to put points on the board. You know what? So I am in, as anyone who listens to any of my shows know, in a relationship with a Cleveland Browns fan. And I would not be able to live my life as easily and as happily as I would like to if I were to say anything other than I believe the Jacksonville Jaguars will beat the Steelers this weekend.
Wow. I thought we would definitely disagree on this, especially, you know, for me, it's just, you know, the Steelers, I have an undying hatred for that franchise and that organization, but it's not just about that with this game. I just think this Jacksonville defense, I really do think they can slow this offense of Pittsburgh down better than really anybody in the league, in my opinion. I'm taking the Jaguars too, and I think it's going to be difficult, you know, to get the offense going for the Jaguars. We saw Blake Bortles last week pass for under 100 yards. Obviously, had a pretty good game on the ground with some big runs, but really didn't put a drive together until that last drive there when they went for it on 4th and 1 at the 1 yard line. But I just think this defense is too good. I think they're going to turn over the Steelers 2 or 3 times, and I think that they're going to put that Jaguars offense in a position to be able to score a few points. And I don't think this is going to be a high scoring game. The over under is at 41. I really think this could go under that over under with that Jacksonville defense, but the Steelers have holes in that defense. And if Jacksonville could just find it a couple times throughout this game, I think they really do pose a threat to Pittsburgh. Maybe the biggest threat that Pittsburgh could have seen in the AFC.
I agree. To this point, obviously, that Patriots team is pretty good, but
right.
But this Jaguars team is not who you want to run into in the second game for the Steelers at all. Well, first game for the Steelers, second game for the Jaguars.
Yeah, we'll see. I definitely was not expecting us to both pick the Jaguars, but I think we both did it for reasons outside of just what our gut is telling us. Because I think the Steelers are going to win the Super Bowl. If you want to know the truth.
to put this in perspective, after this Kirk Cousins thing broke last night, he would consider the Browns in free agency. We're playing out scenarios, just talking in the kitchen, and my girlfriend pointed out that if the Browns were to play the Eagles in the Super Bowl, I would root for the Browns just because my life would be miserable if the Eagles won.
I hear you.
So it is. It's all Steelers. It's all anti-Steelers.
Love it. Love it. Well, you and I would get along just fine then. Last but not least, we've got New Orleans, Minnesota. I think this is the real gem of the weekend. The Saints, a lot of people picking them to go to the Super Bowl. Minnesota's really been there all season as a Super Bowl contender. I can't wait to watch this game. This is definitely the one I'm looking most forward to this weekend. Who do you have in this one?
Yeah, this game's going to be really interesting for me because I'm going to be very interested in it should the Eagles beat the Falcons on Saturday. I desperately want this Vikings team to beat the Saints, largely for the reasons that I mentioned earlier. I just don't think Philly can score with New Orleans. And I think I would much rather take a shot on a lower scoring defensive game against the Vikings. Now, with that said, can the Vikings score with this incredibly hot Saints team of late? It's going to be tough. The emergence of Alvin Kamara to go along with Mark Ingram has really changed the look of this team's offense. You have to worry about the run just as much as the pass, and Drew Brees is one of the most accomplished quarterbacks in NFL history. So are the Vikings up for the gargantuan task of slowing down the Saints offense? Yeah, I don't think so. I think Saints over the Vikings, and I think they're gonna score a bunch of points. I think the Vikings are gonna struggle. They're gonna have to go away from the game they want to play to try and put points on the board. And I think the Saints ultimately lose. The biggest thing for the Vikings, I think, is going to be putting points on the board first, so that they don't have to start playing the kind of game that the Saints want to play.
Yeah, I think I would agree with you if this were in New Orleans, but Minnesota's 7-1 at home this year. I don't know that Case Keenum is really the guy, but we talked about how much of an impact Jacksonville's defense has made on their opponents this year, and you could say the same about Minnesota's defense. I think in large part, they have, in my opinion at least, probably the best defense in the NFC. Obviously, they don't have the offensive attack. They do have a great receiving core. They've got kind of a two-headed monster at the running back position. I think Minnesota's going to squeeze this one out. I think that it'll be a lower-scoring game than people think, even though that Saints offense has been, hitting on all cylinders lately. They also have two great running backs in Kamara and Ingram. And Brees, like you said, obviously a very decorated quarterback. But I think Minnesota, continues their success at home. And that is really, when you talk about home field advantages, you think of Seattle, you think of, teams like we were just talking about with New England. I think that this Minnesota crowd is really going to bring it, and it's going to make it difficult for that Saints offense to get things going. So I have to disagree with you here, and I'm going to take the Vikings.
So wait, just to put this in perspective, and you could very well be right, and I agree with home field advantage stuff and all of that, and the Vikings are excellent at home, but I just want to point this out, and it's going to be all the more impressive if you get it right because of what I'm about to say. So to put this in perspective, you are predicting Blake Bortles beats Ben Roethlisberger and Case Keenum beats Drew Brees to get into one round further in the playoffs.
All right, so the Minnesota one, and your point is well taken, but the Minnesota one, I firmly believe that they will do this. The Steelers-Jaguars, that's legitimately a hatred toward the Steelers pick. So, if both of those things happen, great, but if Bortles loses to the Steelers, I'm not going to be super surprised by that.
Do you you put stock into this, the Jaguars backing Bortles as their quarterback for next year stuff, or do you think that could quietly go away when the season ends if Bortles ends up with 113 yards passing this week?
I was going to say, I think a lot of that hinges on this game. I think if he puts up a formidable stat line in this game and he looks decent, I think that they'll continue that, stick by him. It's similar to my Bengals and Andy Dalton. It's hot and cold. When he's doing decently well, they're backing him. He has a bad game, and they'll start throwing A.J. McCarron's name out there. And I kind of see the same thing with Jacksonville. The difference with Jacksonville for me, though, is they don't really have a backup. Is Chad Henne still the backup for Bortles? So they're not going to the backup.
That's all question.
I don't think that if he has a bad game, they would not consider taking a quarterback if one of those big-name quarterbacks drops later in the first round, maybe the second round, because, God knows that defense is in good shape.
Yeah, I do. That's actually really an interesting question. Is Henny still the backup there in Jacksonville? I would love, because I can't remember. I do think he is. I'm going to say he is.
I believe he is.
All right. I can't think of anybody else at the quarterback position on that roster either.
Either way, it's not good.
No, for sure. For sure, it's not good.
So our predictions are in, folks. The microwave is going to be left off this episode. We're just going to stick to cold pizza. So no microwave this episode. I did have one quick, oh, by the way, on this date in 1987, which oddly enough, the year I was born, the drive took place when John Elway led the Denver Broncos to a win against the Cleveland Browns, pretty much destroying their chances of ever making it to a Super Bowl. So that was, you know, it's always something you hear about in that Browns lore of their disappointments. And I just thought that was kind of interesting that this was the date on 1987, 30 years ago, when that drive took place and Elway ended up leading the Denver Broncos to a Super Bowl.
That is absolutely fascinating.
Any oh, by the ways on your behalf?
I can BS something if you like. I will give you a tangential story that may be interesting to what you just said. We talk about drives. Another one of the great drives in NFL history was a touchdown thrown by Mr. Montana, and the greatest moment of my life. And I stand by this to anyone who asks, and to the detriment of many relationships that I had, was doing an interview with he had a couple of kids who played quarterback, Joe Montana, a couple of kids who played quarterback, Nick and Nate. I did an interview with Nick after the Elite 11 camp when he was going into college, and I had to call him on his home line. Joe Montana answers the phone, and I have a 4-minute conversation with Joe Montana. Greatest moment of my life.
Wow, that would be a big one. I'm sure your girlfriend doesn't want to hear that, but nonetheless,
she knows what the deal is.
Amen. Well, hey, Chris, again, thanks for joining us. If you guys haven't checked them out, go check out all of Chris's podcasts, The Underdog Podcast, Tales from the Association for your NBA, previous NBA player fix, and then your UFC podcast. Remind me the name of that one.
UFC Commentaries. And I would say, let's just, unless you're a big-time MMA fan or just willing to listen to two people talk incessantly about nonsense, probably stick to the first two.
All right, the first two it is. I know I'll be checking both of them out ongoing. So, again, Chris, thanks for filling in for my guys Dan and Anshu. We'll have them back hopefully on Sunday, which we'll release to you on Monday. And enjoy your guys' weekends and enjoy NFL football. For Chris Horwoodell, I'm Josh Dunn. We'll see you next time.